dbkmediaservices.com.
You are listening to the Triple Crown Family Fun Center SBC Sports Talk Podcast. SBC Sports Talk is brought to you by SVCSportsZone.com and Triple Crown Sports. And now, here are your hosts, Shane Combs, John Bruce, and Bruce Knox.
Hello, everybody in SVC land. This is Bruce Knox, along with John Bruce and Shane Combs. We are back for the Triple Crown Family Fun Center SVC Sports Talk. This is a return for basketball season, and it is show 267 if you're keeping count. It is brought to you by, as all are, the Triple Crown Family Fun Center, all kinds of fun under one roof, located at 1 Nancy Wilson Way in Chillicothe, right off of Bridge Street, just behind the Hampton Inn. Give them a call, 740-773-7529, or look up detailed information at TripleCrownFamilyFunCenter.com. They're open 7 days a week from 11 a.m. to 10 p.m. I just feel like we've never even left, gentlemen. And first I'd like to bring in to say hello, John Bruce. John, how are you after this big break that we've been through?
I'm doing well, just reflecting on my 5 days off of school and realizing that I didn't really do anything outside of basketball, so I'm pretty pleased with that, actually.
You're okay with that. Well, last time we really spoke, I guess, was probably that fateful Friday night at Bainbridge when we called the Paint Valley playoff game, and after going through that monumental evening with the likes of Shane and myself, any reflections back on that game and that whole event?
Just kind of how easy you made it for all of us. I was,
oh, bless
you. You know, I might be sucking up, but I felt like, especially in Shane also, just, I just got to be there. Uh-huh. And, it was really fun. I enjoyed it. Look forward to doing something like that again in the future. It was really fun. It was a great game. It wasn't the outcome we wanted, it was still a great game. So I was happy we got to do it.
Yeah, I wanted to thank everybody out at PV for making that so easy for us as far as technology standpoint and so forth. And we learned a few things. And Shane, want to bring you in here, say hello, and also, you know, I'm just eager to hear of any feedback, because sometimes we don't, and we have not talked since the last game that we went to there. What was the feedback? What are your thoughts on the game and just the whole event?
Well, it certainly is good to be back in the studio, and you're exactly right. Paint Valley was outstanding to give us everything we needed. And then, as John said, Bruce made life easy on us, just sit there and talk sports. But I think the feedback from Paint Valley was so appreciative because, again, there was no other media there that night in terms of a radio call. And so they were able to go back and listen and then have the podcast kind of as a keepsake type of thing for a lot of their kids. I know a lot of families have been able to, you know, to download that and keep a copy, so forth. So it's just exciting to get to do that for kids. And as John said, it wasn't the outcome we wanted, but it was a terrific game. Got a chance to watch a terrific player there on the other side, as well as an incredible senior class from Paint Valley that's given so much to the program. And it's just kind of it was just a perfect cap really to the fall season in terms of the coverage we're able to give, and now excited to move forward to winter.
Well, speaking of moving forward to winter, what are your thoughts on looking forward to all these winter shows that we're going to come up with?
Well, I think what's so exciting about our winter shows, guys, is how unique we can be for basketball. In the fall, it seems like there's something just all the time coming up in every different sport. We cover, what, about 4, 5, 6 different sports in the fall. It's just like today, another headline, congratulations, Lane Ruby. Yeah. I know it was announced this afternoon, D6 Offensive Player of the Year. That's outstanding. It's just so much, and we try not to cheat anything. We really try to spread the wealth, but in doing that, maybe sometimes we can't get as detailed in a particular thing as someone in that particular sport or a fan of that particular sport would want. Basketball, we that's not really the issue. We'll mention some wrestling throughout the winter, but most of our shows are geared toward basketball. And with boys and girls matching up in the same sport, you know, obviously, John, in the fall, football and volleyball are their own two separate things, where a lot of times what I find, I don't know if you get the same thing, I get asked so many different questions just in general. I know, like, even the agenda tonight, as we go through, and you know, Bruce will give each of these people a great shout out, but I certainly don't want to cheat an opportunity here early in the show, Bruce, to say thank you to Advanced Services. Mm-hmm. Thank you to Crown Hill Golf Club. Thank you to North Fork Animal Clinic. Those are three sponsors that throughout the show kind of drive, obviously, as you said, Triple Crown Family Fun Center is the reason SPC Sports Talk even exists. But in order for us to kind of make the shows grow a little bit and give a little bit more detail, a little bit longer shows throughout the years, certainly thanks to Advanced Services, Crown Hill Golf Club, and North Fork Animal Clinic. But I think as we go through the night, what you'll see is a lot of these topics are not really geared for just boys or just girls. It's just SVC basketball in general. And I think that's what makes the winter so unique, is we're able to really dive in and break down a sport that I know I love, I know John loves, and obviously we have a lot of people throughout the Side of Valley Conference that love it, so should be a lot of fun.
All right, we'll get right into it here. This is the first of our basketball shows. We'll probably go up until late February, around there sometime, before we take another break. So let's just get right into it, plow through the agenda here. First thing up on the agenda, we want to talk a little bit about the SVC preview. And, John, you're up first. I'm going to come to you. And why don't you kind of just give us your opinion on the event? What do you like it? Do you not like it? Thumbs up, thumbs down. What you thinking? I know where you're going.
As a player, I didn't like it.
Okay. Why so?
The only cool thing to me as a player was, everyone's in the same gym. You get to see some friends. You didn't see that much. But now with social media, you can see how everyone's doing all the time.
I see.
As a coach, I really don't enjoy the event. First off, it starts too early in the day. I mean, it starts at 5. The first game that was out there, it seriously felt like there's about 50 people in the gym, mm-hmm. minus the players and coaches and whatnot. By the time the second game was over and the three-point contest was going on, it was pretty packed. But then for the last game, there's nobody there then either. Mm-hmm. So it's just I feel like I know it's it helps make money for the league. It helps drive the awards for all sports. But man, it can be really tedious to get through. Nobody really shows anything, and mm-hmm. I think as a coach, you really just pray that nobody gets hurt.
Yeah.
And that's across the league. I mean, you're just hoping, okay, you know, last game, Southeastern St. Trace, let's just hope everyone gets through healthy. So, even as a Unioto guy, you're like, okay, let's make this as painless as possible. Mm-hmm. Now, I will say I do like the three-point contest.
Okay, that's just what I was going to ask you. Are you a fan of the three-point contest?
Yeah, I think it's something that the players enjoy. I would almost rather see it be, I don't know, almost like a meet the team thing, to where there's just different contests involved, like skill competitions. I think that maybe would be something to change it up, but I don't know. I do know that in the three-point contest, the teams get behind their guy that's in it, mm-hmm. or girl that's in it. It doesn't take a whole lot of time, 10, 15 minutes. And, you know, it doesn't really throw off the overall flow of the event, because you still have the 10 minutes in between to warm up. So I do like the three-point contest.
Okay.
Other than that, I don't love it. I am glad that we don't have to host it for another 6 years.
Okay.
So I can go in and out when I please, even though I was there the entire time. I left a couple minutes early in the last game, but that was it. I mean, I got there at the beginning and stayed. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, it like people like me are going to go and observe even as coaches. So,
right.
I'm not a huge fan of it.
Well, Shane, what's your response to John, or maybe just kind of answer the same question, his opinion of the event, and then pointedly, do you like the 3-point contest?
I think I relate to John's answer. I think what happens over the years when you've done this as long as I've done is you understand that the preview is a must fundraiser. You understand that our league, I know I'm critical of the league sometimes, but our league does do an incredible job of how we honor our kids, how we promote our kids. Some of the things that we do in terms of banquets and like I said, awards and so forth. I don't love the overall basketball parts of the preview, but again, I absolutely love the 3-point contest. And John, I think you're on to something. Here's an idea I'd come up with. It just hit me that this year's 3-point contest, as I was watching, what happens, guys, to go behind the scenes here a little bit, the 3-point contest isn't quite what it is at the higher levels because of the resources and the lack of resources. You know, most schools aren't going to have 10 ball racks.
Right.
They're not going to have they're not going to have 50 basketballs. So what happens is I know like the girls preview, we were running the Paint Valley girls on rebounding and running balls across and putting them on the other rack so that by the time the kids got there, they could get there. And in response, we only shot, 15 on each end.
Right.
So what I would love to see them do, John, because it's by far the highlight of the evening. It's the one time it's very well thought out in terms of the brackets are already set. They're predetermined by the schools that play each other. It goes from 8-4 to 2-1 for people not familiar, and they basically go 1 minute to shoot 15 shots. The winner advances and so forth. What I would love to see them do, John, so that they wouldn't have to count on other schools to bring bags of basketballs and to bring in some cases we've asked schools to bring like their ball racks and their ball carts and so forth with them. What I would like to go to is put 5 kids out there. You have 2 shooters. You have 3 rebounder passers, and you basically are allowed 4 basketballs in play. And what would happen was, or would happen is you would have more of an effort and strategy and teamwork that would have to come into play. You'd use the entire minute, and you'd have 2 shooters that are basically, you know, trying to get off as many 3-pointers as possible, and you just count the makes. The other 3, the strategy and the teamwork would come on their effort of rebounding, the skill level of accurate passes and so forth, and recognizing who needs to chase down a ball, who needs to make sure they're getting balls to shooters and so forth. So there'd be a lot of different strategies, and the whole minute would be used. You know, because we were only shooting the 15 shots, some kids that shoot at a higher pace could get more shots off, which I think would be a benefit as well. So it's by far the highlight of the evening. It happens in between the second and third game, so it's very easy for all 8 schools to be there. You know, you're only asking the first 2 teams to stick around for 1 more game. Mm-hmm. You're only asking the last 2 teams to be there before the third game, which you'd almost coach – as a coach, John, you'd almost naturally be anyway. So I love a lot about it, and I think John's on to some different skill competitions and so forth. At the end of the night, you probably are always going to play, or at least feel like you have to play. But if you could get more and more of these types of challenges, I think you would still get a lot of the same people to attend. Mm-hmm. They're still probably always going to play because, again, they probably feel like that's what sells the actual ticket of getting each parent and each, you know, grandparent, aunt, uncle, friend, whatever. The preview is what it is. It's something I've learned to tolerate, but it's something at the same time that this 3-point contest, the league is certainly on to something in terms of spicing up the evening a little bit.
All right, we got a fan question with regards to the preview. It says, so many coaches handle the preview so many different ways. What's the best way to handle it? In other words, do you sit kids, certain kids? Do you play everybody? Do you split lineups? Do you run your stuff? Are you kind of hiding things? I think John mentioned that from others. What do you guys think about the proper way to handle the preview? John, we'll go to you first.
I know I said it, but like here's the thing: if a coach is doing their job, they're going to see you play before you actually match up during the regular season anyway. So I don't really think you can hide from the scouting aspect. you're probably not going to run your stuff. You're probably not going to play your groupings together. So your rotation will be a little different. But if a coach is watching, they can pick up on tendencies and different things from personnel. Mm-hmm. So, if kids are playing, then, coaches are going to be able to see it. Now, you're going to see teams, teams get film any way possible. So teams get film. They're going to watch you before anyway. So they're going to have an idea. So like we had pretty much two groups this year and we just ran in our base offense. Mm-hmm. Something that we put in over the summer. So if you saw us over the summer, you had an idea of what that thing is. Now, how much are we going to actually run that during the season? So that's where you would see the other stuff. I think the only way you sit kids is if they're dinged up, even if it's just a little bit, because you don't want to push it. Like I know Nick Nesser didn't play in the preview for St. Trace, and it was great to hear that he was back on Saturday or on Friday mm-hmm. for St. Trace. So that was
look good, look good. Played about 20 minutes there on my sheet of notes I had down, and was in real good rhythm on the offensive end. Played well.
Good, so that's to me that's like he's the type of player you don't play in it, but if your kids are healthy, play them. It's they still get to play in front of the crowd, get to play, and it's a lot more relaxed, so just kind of just playing. I think you split your lineups, you just run basic things, and you play your healthy kids. That's the way I think you do it.
Shane, what are your thoughts on this?
I honestly, as I get older, I kind of learn more and more, and I've changed my philosophy on this a little bit. I'll say this. I think no coach should apologize for how they handle the preview.
Right.
It's like any other preseason thing. You don't owe it to anybody to quote-unquote handle the preview a certain way. It's unique to every situation. If you are experienced and locked and loaded and you're healthy and you might not want to get scouted as much, like John said, you're going to get kind of looked at anyway. Mm-hmm. You might have the ability to split your lineups. You probably, if you're that good anyway, you're probably deep enough to split your lineups and still go out and play a very respectable 16 minutes of basketball. Other teams split their lineup and they might be in jeopardy of putting certain kids in some very uncomfortable positions. If you're young, or you might be using it as a learning tool. I'll use an example of the Paint Valley girls. It was by far, not even close, it was by far our best preseason look. So we were going to utilize every opportunity to get better. We were playing Uniota, of course, which is obviously the best team in the league, very, very good. But we don't have the opportunity and practice with the young guards to get them the experience of going against the ball pressure of an Amber Cotter or Hallie Pinkerton. So unless Amber and Hallie are willing to, after Coach Miller's practice, to drive out to Bainbridge and practice with us a little bit.
I don't see that happening.
Right. I'm assuming Jeff would be against that.
Yeah.
Right.
It makes it very tough for us to simulate that type of look, or Emily Coleman off the dribble, us getting a chance to guard that. So it was an incredible look for our young kids. Now, it would have been, we're in a situation where in the preseason we were without four of our top 10 players. It would have been very unfair of us to just put our kids into a 5-5 and say, okay, go get you a little Uniota here. You know what I mean? Like that would be unfair to them, and we would not be benefiting from that. So honestly, it was just a half a basketball, but it was an incredible learning situation. I love what John said about if you have a kid that's nursing an injury or different things, why would you risk it? But I think that goes for any practice or a physical scrimmage in practice or a preseason scrimmage at all, doesn't it, John? I mean, to me, if you are healthy and within your schedule, you didn't, scrimmage 6-7. When the preview was on Saturday before, a lot of times you'd go through 6-7-8 quarters of scrimmage that morning, John. You might not be thrilled to death about having some of your kids out there, going real hard that night as well. Mm-hmm. Sometimes you'd protect them from themselves. I've had nightmares in the preview happen to me before. I remember one year, Craig Kearns and I had just an incredible team at Paint Valley, and we lost Chris Young and Drew Bob in the same preview.
That was against my team, my senior year. That's why I said sorry.
but again, it's one of those things where you can get hurt in any scrimmage, in any practice drill, any non-contact thing. Obviously, and it just happens. So the fact that it happens in the preview, I don't know that it's the fault of the preview. It could have happened Saturday morning at a scrimmage, and you wouldn't think anything of it because you're scrimmaging. So that's the way I feel about the basketball. The basketball is always going to be just a little bit ugly because you're going to have kids playing maybe out of some of the normal combinations. You're not going to run as much as your stuff. Although I joke, John, sometimes with the young team, hey, just start running all your plays. There'll be three or four kids mess them up anyway. It'll just mess the scout up. So, but that's kind of where I come from. I think that to sum it up would be to say that no coach should ever apologize for how he or she deems necessary to prepare their team for the regular season.
All right. Anything else, John, you can think of there that you want to impart, or is that it?
No, that really covered it. I mean, you're right. It's just never apologize for it, and just
it is what it is. Huh?
It is what it is, and I am always looking forward to getting through it.
Well, speaking of getting through it, now that we're through preseason, next thing on the mind of the fans is the best way to start the regular season. And we get started here with the regular season, so to speak, in this section brought to you by North Fork Animal Clinic Boarding and Grooming. Their telephone number 740-773-7387. Dr. Blake Lloyd and his staff at 2260 Anderson Station Road in Chillicothe, ready to take care of all your small animal needs. You can look them up on the web at northforkanimalclinic.com. Okay, guys, so we've talked about preseason a little bit. We talked about the preview, obviously. Now, what about, are you guys in favor of tip-off classics? This was a fan question that brought in as well. Tip-off classics. And since I went to John on the last one, I'm going to go to you, Shane, on this one. What's your thought about tip-off classics?
Well, I certainly enjoy the ones with the hospitality rooms the most.
Yes. That's my Shane.
Hey, Bruce, you'll appreciate this. Today at the family dinner, Eric Snyder was telling me that Jay and Daddy once again was taking care of him this year with the meatballs. You'll remember all the way back some of our early shows that the meatballs. So he said, you make sure that you give Jay and Daddy and the fine people at Zane Trace a shout out for making sure that everyone knows how much that's appreciated. But in all seriousness, the people at Zane Trace have always done a good job. I know some other schools are doing some different things. Obviously, if you're a basketball junkie, you kind of like the all-day opportunity. Mm-hmm. Some of the atmospheres, John talked about in the preview a little bit, you get some of those things early mornings and throughout the day games and some weird start times. You get a little bit of that in terms of some weird atmospheres, but I think coaches kind of like the scouting opportunity. I don't know. I like seeing all the different systems, and you know, you'll see 6-7 different people. I'll tell you, one of the biggest problems that concern me about classics comes from the obsession we have with Ohio State football in this area. So what happens is, I mean, I love me some Ohio State football as much as the next person. I don't know that it should just shut down our life. You know what I mean? So like when we're having basketball season, I think it's okay to still have basketball season. I think that kind of kills some of our schedule and some of those different things. So I don't know, John, if you feel like maybe over Christmas, the holiday tournaments would have more success where, you know, some of those extra things aren't as much of a factor, but I enjoy them. I certainly understand where more of the casual fan would not.
John, your thoughts? And by the way, Shane, I have some other thoughts too, Shane. Go ahead, John.
I mean, yes. I also want to shout out Jan Detti and the meatballs. Brock Netter and I, along with Derek Webb, were in there, and I think we all went and got seconds. I did not get thirds. I take offense to that. They might have because I left before they did, so they may have gotten thirds. But it's kind of like I think they're still a good thing. As kind of a basketball junkie, I was able to watch 13 different teams this weekend between Zane Trace and the Piketon Classic. So, I mean, you know, obviously I like that as a coach who won't have a ton of time to get to games personally to scout. I like that because you get to watch teams early and you can get a little read on them. Obviously, with many of the teams will play in like three weeks or maybe even after the new year. So a lot of things will be different. So you're just looking at personnel on a lot of the stuff, but you know, it's fun. And like down at Piketon, at both places, you get to watch some really good coaches. And as a coach and still trying to learn, I like watching coaches and seeing how they interact with their teams.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Different adjustments they make, and you know, maybe borrow/steal something here and there to make myself better and to help my team. So that part I do like. I do think that at the beginning there's almost too many. I don't know if you saw Coach Huffer's stuff on Facebook about Chillicothe winning their classic that they're in. There was a little 4-team tournament, but it looked like there was about 30 people there because when they weren't playing Zanesville, there weren't going to be very many people there. So, you know, I do think it can be kind of hard to, you know, get up for some of those atmospheres, but you know, I do think they are a good thing, but at the same time, maybe they are a thing of the past. Because you know, it's just, it felt like for years, St. Trace was a 2-day, like 11 game event, and today it was this year is a 1-day event, and the last game started at 6. So I mean, it was, there wasn't really, and I know some of the football season extending kind of hurt a little bit of that, but I do think that I do think they're still a good thing, and I still enjoy them.
Shane, maybe I'm way off kilter here, but I had an event. And it wasn't a tip-off classic; it was a regular game. But you said you love you some Ohio State football, but to be particularly for something like a tip-off classic, you are relying on lots and lots of volunteers, are you not?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay. Yeah. Well, in our case, we had a game scheduled for 12:00 this past Saturday. At Vinton County girls. And right. I was amazed at the number of people that showed up for it, but I think it did hurt. And there were a lot of volunteers that ended up working on a holiday weekend for that as well. It just so happened that it typically lines up with Thanksgiving, the Saturday after. But I understand that we don't stop for everything, but it was a holiday weekend. Now, all these classics typically don't take place on holiday weekends. Is that the case? Or like, did Chillicothe's, John, take place over the holiday weekend?
Yeah, it was Friday, Saturday.
Yeah. Well,
keep in mind, this week for the Zane Trace,
yeah,
usually the Zane Trace is the weekend of the Big Ten Championship, because usually it would be next week.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
This was the normal week that would have always been the Paint Valley Lady Classic. Cats Classic, which doesn't really exist anymore, but remember, for the longest time there, that would always be your Ohio State Michigan Saturday. Yeah. There the week before.
Well, it just in my case, I was had to go to the game, and I was a little red about it, and my AD, Mr. Matt Combs, knows that as well, and He heard me, so I just thought I'd mention.
Well, and here's the thing on that too. I understand the Ohio State Michigan thing, and I think there's a lot of people that I'm guessing. I don't want to speak for them at Zane Trace. I didn't ask. I'm guessing that's why it was only a 1 day event. John was because of what happened Saturday at noon, and I get that for like the Ohio State Michigan where it's already on the schedule and you can know right then and know how to schedule around it.
Yeah,
I think it's difficult. Is like, you know, it's coming. If Ohio State makes the playoffs, which now it looks like they will, you know it's coming. If anybody's playing around those particular times, you know things are going to start to get, you know, moved around and whatnot. And you know, it is – again, it goes back to my phrase. It is what it is. You know, yeah. You know it's coming. You just adjust to it. And, you know, there's a lot of people that care about that. At the end of the day, you'd rather have, like you said, you need the volunteers to run those particular events. The one thing I will say before we get off this topic is I think the right four-team tournaments can be very successful, John. I think in that particular case, you had some schools, particularly Chillicothe, going quite a distance away from home. Right. I think the Pike County, for example, has been on the something for years. I've never attended that where – you know, you don't have to kind of fight for a seat a little bit. You know, that place is packed. And I hate to see that break up, even if it does a little bit this year, because I think that if you can find, from a geography standpoint, the right four schools outside of four different leagues or at least three different leagues and at least promise those two league schools you won't play each other unless you both win or both lose – I don't know that that's the end of the world, but like if you can find four schools, I've always felt like Vinton County and Jackson and Southeastern and like say Oak Hill would make a lot of sense down that way. Or a lot of times you'll get some of the county schools that naturally play in different conferences and it seems to work. But, you know, inside an hour drive where you're going to play over the holiday break, you don't even have to do it on back-to-back nights. A lot of times, John, you can do it, you know, right before Christmas after Christmas and then give it 3 or 4 days and do it right before the new year or whatnot. So we're always looking to play over the holiday. It would just make sense. And you could certainly rotate it between the four schools if the gyms and the facilities would allow it. And everyone makes a little bit of money and so forth there. So I think those are some of the types of things, but there's still room for the classics. I think that it's just, like you said, it's gotta be something your community buys into. I know Zane Trace was really late this year, not knowing if they were going to continue to do it. And again, that's why I take hats off to the people that made it happen, because that's a long lasting tradition that I hate to see end.
We had another question related to this. It says, in a year where the league play is delayed, and we've kind of got that this year for lots of reasons, the calendar being one of them, do you like playing more or less, playing less early in the year? I mean, is it good to really get in there and mix it up, or is it kind of better to – maybe just slide into the schedule?
Well, the first thing I'll ask John, can you make any sense out of what in the world we're doing with the boys' schedule?
No.
I don't understand the December, 13th? When you told me that the other night, John, remember we were talking there before we left and stuff. I walked to my car and I'm like, I must have misunderstood him. He must have been a week off or whatever. And I'll be if I pulled my phone out and didn't look at that. And I'm like, what in the world? Like, you know, if nothing else, I haven't heard very many modern day coaches at all love the back to back. You know, why not at least use this upcoming weekend to at least play a single? I just didn't understand that. Again, I know the I don't want to bury the lead. This all goes back to this whole OHSA and the money, the dollar bill drives the decisions, and we can't have Thanksgiving football, and then we've got to have the state tournament at a certain time and certain place. And it's kind of – what it's done is it's just taken hostage every other sport, particularly – the boys' winter and spring sports, and I guess that's where I would start with my answer before I even could start to say the difference. Is I would ask you, am I reading that right, John? That the league really dropped the ball moving this back as far as they did?
I think so, because I mean we took off the first weekend, and I was like, why are we doing that? Oh, it turns out that we don't play in the league for another week after this, so why rush the games? I feel like the league, and if you look at it, like normally you play the seven schools in order, right? Mm-hmm. Well, ours isn't in order. We play, I believe Zane Trace, we play the fourth game, either the fourth or fifth game of the first round, and then we play them like the third game of the second round. And it's just like something got switched somewhere in there. It's weird how we're doing it. I do think that
I think it has something to do with the all day events. Don't quote me on that, but either the all day events or when they did make the change, they got flipped out of order, because I believe that's the same way for everybody.
Yeah, thank God there's no more all day events. I don't think there are. I was told there wasn't any, but
well, what they've done is they've moved the JV games, I believe, to a separate night. A lot of schools have. I'll get some more details on that, but I think what they've done is they've moved the JV freshman stuff to another night, and then they're doing something different with the varsity games.
Oh boy! So I'd probably need to relook at my schedule on that then. But yeah, I mean, for me, I like playing less, especially if you would have watched my JV team play the foundation game against Benton County, you would know that I did not want to play on Friday this past week. I really enjoyed having the couple extra days of practice, because practice is so important, because it gives you a chance to make changes daily where, you know, you might be able to experiment a little bit more without it really affecting your record, especially at the lower levels, because, I mean, you're not playing for a tournament.
Right.
So, you know, it's the games are important for the kids. But, you know, I think having a backlog of games in January and February can wear on your team as well, because especially when the weather turns into snow.
Yeah.
Or ice, whichever it decides to do this year. Hopefully it's not both. But the last couple of years, it's just canceled one entire weekend, at least maybe two. And then really forces you into kind of just a really not much practice, a lot of games late in the season.
Well, I think it goes back to where you're at again. I hate to keep saying that, but it's just so true, Bruce. It's, you know, if you're a program that's locked and loaded and you're ready to go, you know, you want to try to be playing your very best right at the beginning there at league play. Whereas if you're a program that's struggling a little in over your head in the league, well, now all of a sudden your non-conference schedule gives you an ability in a year like this. If you as a coach and your AD are on the same page and you put together the proper type of schedule, well, now all of a sudden you can build a lot of confidence. You know mm-hmm. what I'm saying? You can be a 3-0, a 3-1 basketball team going into conference play. Well, I've always said, if you start 4-0, and then all you do is go into league play, well, you can go 0-4 halfway through league play, John, and you're 500. Because, you know, a lot of times confidence-wise, especially to kids, you are what your record says you are. So, you know, those are the types of things that are interesting dynamic too. You'll see a lot of these league favorites, they'll go out in the non-league early in the year and really test themselves, because losing a game or two is not a fear, because they understand that throughout the year they're going to win, you know, X amount of games or so forth. Whereas other schools that are really trying to keep their head above water, that offers them a different dynamic. I'm fascinated by scheduling early in the year in terms of not only who plays or how much they play, but who they play. So it's not just how many times they play, but I'm always interested to see how schedules were put together. And sometimes it's probably just luck of the draw, but the more I get to know certain coaches that have been there a little bit longer, believe me, these schedules are made with great strategy involved, and that's fascinating to me.
Well, that's interesting. Very interesting. But let's move away from scheduling concepts a little bit here and talk about players and teams that will headline the action this season. And I don't think anybody will be surprised to see where Shane's mind goes first in breaking down the teams. Well, This section is going to be sponsored by Crown Hill Golf Club. Crown Hill Golf Club, 9500 U.S. Route 22 West in Williamsport. Their phone number is 740-986-4653. You can look up detailed information at crownhillgolfclub.com. You can give them a call. Right now, you might be thinking about the holiday parties and so forth, and you can use some of their facilities out there. They have some great ones for hosting your holiday party. And, of course, Christmas is just around the corner, so that means you can buy whatever you need for that golfer on your Christmas list from Crown Hill Golf Club. Give them a call. Kevin and the people out there will help you out. 740-986-4653. Well, as I alluded to just
before... Bruce, let me interrupt you.
Sure. Like
I should have thrown this to you in our pre-show meeting. Kevin was saying on the indoor golf instruction, there's some things available as well there to give a call. So you can contact there to get a little bit more information, but throughout the winter, not just the gift cards, but also some indoor golf instruction.
Okay, that would be great. Well, as I was saying, we're going to look forward here a little bit and talk about some of the players and the teams that will headline the action this season. And my first question, Shane says, people are drawing a lot of comparison to the Uniota girls and the Zane Trace boys. Do you agree with that? And if so, why?
Well, it's hard not to agree with it. I see where they're coming from. I think first, John, they're both really good. So I think that's the obvious comparison. But I wanted to start here, John, and get your take. I just finished up doing my Great Seal Sports for the upcoming issue. That remember, I always write those things a month ahead of time. So coming up later on next month, some of the basketball coverage will come out, and we're featuring Emily Coleman and Colby Swain. We're talking about the point guard position, and it's not really just the point guard position, but it kind of evolves into the actual overall guard play. And I don't think it's by coincidence that we're looking at the best team on the girls' side, best team on the boys' side, and that they are rock solid at the point and rock solid overall guard play. When I think of Coleman and Cottrell with a great complement of a Pinkerton, and then on the boys' side with Swain, and then obviously Evans is terrific, and then you know even the versatility of a Nesser and what he's able to do with his ball skills and his passing ability and his ability to get his own shot whenever he wants it. I guess that's where it starts to me. They certainly have a long list of athletes on both those teams, you know, with Davidson and Johnson, and then on the other side with a Stalley, and I think Miller is going to be one of the real breakout stars. Talking Avery Miller, Alexis Miller, obviously one of the elite shooters in our league, but Avery Miller I think is going to be one of the real breakout stars in our league. So I guess for me, John, I certainly get the comparison that these people are making and all the preseason conversations I'm in. I think it starts with guard play. I certainly see it throughout. What's your take when you hear people make that analogy and comparing the boys and girls game?
I do think that they are comparable. They're both senior dominated lineups that came off a gold ball winning season. So I do think it's a pretty apt comparison. Both are very strong in the guard play. I think a big difference is, if you look at probably the overall top player in the league, it's going to be Cam Evans on the boys' side. I think you probably go with Allison Basie on the girls from Huntington. So Uniota does it a little bit more with depth. All the players you mentioned, they're even losing a couple players with injuries, and they still have a bunch of depth. So, I mean, you know, they kind of come at you in waves, where Zane Trace it seems like just the main five players, although I've heard a lot of good things about Bryce Johnson in the preseason. Mm-hmm. I know he hit a couple of big shots for him the other day, and they have a nice freshman group. So, I mean, they have a little bit more depth than they had last year, Zane Trace does. But I do think that there are some comparisons, but I also when you look at point guard play, you know, and just guards in general, I think that, you know, both teams are elite at the guard level. One thing that I kind of look at with Zane Trace is, do they have the depth at guard if they get in foul trouble? I know that they had some front court injuries that seem to have worked themselves out, but they had a little bit more depth in the front court. So, mm-hmm. you know, that's my only thing there. Uniota has some good depth at the guard, playing three guards, and Avery Miller has guard skills also, and then
really talented. Yeah.
So I mean,
you're talking about a kid last year. I made the comment would have probably started played a huge role for the other seven schools in the league. Mm-hmm. I said she could have borderline been all league for three or four.
Yeah.
Really good play.
Yeah, and didn't play a whole lot until later in the year because I mean there wasn't a spot. So I mean, and she, you know, grinded away at the JV level and is showing how talented she is early on in the season so far this year. So I do think, you know, those are the best backcourts in the league, and that is why they are the top teams in their respective leagues, in my opinion.
Yeah, it's funny, Bruce. We were talking about handling the preview. Mm-hmm. I had different people come up to me, and you know, partially they're joking, partially I think they're telling what they believe to be the truth. They were saying that, like, you know, I think Uniota's second team could finish second in the league, mm-hmm. or I heard the same thing with, man, Zane Trace's second team would be awfully impressive. But I think to your point, John, in all seriousness, that I have to remind myself sometimes what some of the best teams I've had a chance to be around or coach or play on or whatever, it's the competition within practice. Like mm-hmm. the competition that Coach Miller and Coach Kello are able to get just in their hour and a half every night, they don't have to go out and get real creative in it. You know what I mean? You don't always have to bring in other people. You don't always – you basically have it right there in your own gym, and that in itself really gives you an opportunity. I know Emily said something to me in the interview for Great Hill Sports. She's like, one of the challenges of being the point guard, I thought this was really good comment. She said that you get the other team's, you know, best defender or lead on ball defender. And if you think about it, John, that's probably true, right? We always put our yes. best on ball defender out there on the point, and you know, they get that opportunity. I know growing up that I had the opportunity. I had the best on-ball defender in the league on my own team, and Mike Fout. Well, so in three-on-three full court every night, Mike and I always felt like we could push each other. He felt like I was as good a ball handler that he was guarding. I felt like he was as good an athlete that was guarding me. And I'm sure that that's what a Coleman and Cottrell can give each other a lot of times, or with a Pinkerton, and then you even mentioned the athleticism down through that roster there. Zane Trace, I think, gosh, had what, 15, 16, 17 kids over there the other night
yeah.
that were in uniform or at least travel suit or something. So the Robinson kid is a nice looking kid. Nichols is a nice kid. You mentioned Johnson. So not just those five starters. That would include Davidson and Luke Johnson, but like you said, Bryce Johnson on down the list there. So I do. I think that those are some good comparisons, and I think it's the depth. And when we say depth, Bruce, we're not just talking game night. Don't forget the ability for them to get after each other in practice and get better throughout the year in that way.
All right. Well, we'll move along then. In this week's final segment, we spread the wealth around to the league. To you, the fans, some key players, teams, and concepts to focus on throughout the year. And our third section here being brought to us by Advanced Services Heating, Cooling, and Refrigeration. Advanced Services HVAC.com. Give them a call, 877-947-4499. They're celebrating 20 years of serving Southern Ohio, and you can schedule a consultation today on their website. Advanced Services, 877-947-4499. Guys, we've got some questions here for you that's probably going to bring a lot of names up, a lot of different concepts up. And some of them, the first two anyway, are kind of fill in the blanks. So I'm going to come in, give you these questions, and we'll discuss here. In this year's SVC for the boys, the fans are missing blank when predicting a lot of outcomes for this year's race. In this year's SVC for the boys, the fans are missing blank when predicting a lot of outcomes for this year's race. John, we're going to come to you on this one.
I'll say the fans are missing the three-point shot when okay. predicting a lot of outcomes. With how the game is played now, it is kind of evolving. And if you shoot the three ball, you you shoot it well, you have a chance. Last season, Zane Trace really routinely attempted like 10 to 12 threes a game. On opening night, they hit 7. So, I mean, that's going from maybe hitting 3 or 4 to 7. I mean, with how close that game was until the last 4 minutes, you know, that does make a big difference. Piketon hit 10 in their win against White Oak on Saturday night, with Levi Goyen hitting 5, and Brody Fuller hitting 3 for him. I mean, that's the three-pointer can keep you in games. Mm-hmm. Now, if you are not shooting it well, that's when you could see a big upset if a team is relying on it. Or, you know, one way or the other. I think you have to look at the teams that shoot the ball well. I know Adina shoots the ball really well. I know Unioto were shooting the ball better this year than we did last year. And, you know, the four teams I named are, you know, near the top of the list. And then you look at Huntington's win over Nelsonville York on Saturday or on Friday. My days are all thrown off by this holiday, by the way. Caleb Smith went nuts in the second half. Jay Wyman had a nice weekend shooting the three ball for Westfall. You know, the 3-point shot can really make a big difference in the game. Also, they're in their win over Washington Courthouse on Saturday night. Why can't I think of the catcher's name, Shane?
Spawn.
So, yeah. Connor Spawn Connor Spawn hits a 3 to win the game for Westfall in their first game, mm-hmm. or in their to go 2-0. So, I mean, the 3-pointer is such a big part of the game now. You know, a lot of teams, maybe they aren't necessarily just running sets for threes, but their offense goes around to where they're going to get a lot of shots. Mm-hmm. So if you don't defend the 3 well, and you don't shoot it well, that's when you can be upset by some of these teams.
Shane, how do you complete this sentence? In this year's SVC for the boys, the fans are missing blank when predicting a lot of outcomes for this year's race.
I think it's the fact that the depth in the league's a little better than originally explained. I think people, again, because the way scrimmages work and the way foundation games work and the way previews work, certain teams, when they try to play too many kids, or when they start trying to play and hide certain things, or they don't open up the whole playbook, they can start to look bad. You know what I mean? You almost have to get to the regular season and allow the coach to play the true combinations and to open up the playbook and show, hey, here's everything we have to offer. And, you know, if my math is correct, in the top half, we need 4 teams to make a top half in our league. Right, John? So, I mean, if we all agree that Zane Trace and Adina are up there, and a lot of people are ready to put Unioto in the 3 hole, well, that means out of Paint Valley, Piketon, and Westfall, that means 2 of those 3 teams are supposedly in the bottom half in most people's minds, okay? Or even if you're not ready to put Unioto in the 3, that means Unioto, Paint Valley, Piketon, Westfall. That means only 2 of those teams are at the top. So if 2 of those teams are in the bottom, you know, all of a sudden I start looking around this past weekend, and John's tweet reminded us very nicely last night, what, 8-1?
Yep, 8-1.
That's pretty good. The Grubb had 28. McFadden healthy, Newland coming back, Gallion 21. You mentioned the 5 threes. Chandler had a really nice weekend for Piketon as well.
Yes, he did.
Westfall 2-0, beating 2 D2 schools. The 3 ball, you highlighted that well. I'd even throw Lee Master, and the versatility of Blackburn was really eye opening to me. Beeler's 21. You mentioned Smith shooting well. Again, the point guard play. Halbau, I think on my sheet, I had him for about 31 minutes, and I don't remember him turning the ball over. If he did, maybe once, twice at the most. Southeastern, I had a real nice report from them today. I'm hearing good things about the new Boston team they played, and sounded like they were competitive. So I guess my point is, When you're trying to chase down a Zane Trace, it's not just the head-to-head. They don't give you a whole lot of room for error. So you're probably going to have to go 12-0, at least 11-1 against the quote-unquote the rest of the league. And keep in mind, last year it was Adina losing to Huntington that kind of offset some of those things. So I'm not saying that some of these teams down here at the bottom can compete with these top two or three teams over the course of 14 games, but I'm saying if these are the types of teams that are going to make up, quote unquote, the bottom half, and John just highlighted the neutralizer, the 3-point shot, not to mention some really, really good coaches. I just think that you better be real, real careful overlooking the depth in this league compared to the way it maybe was originally explained to me.
Okay, let's flip over to the girls and have kind of the same blank. In this year's SEC for the girls, the fans are missing blank when predicting a lot of outcomes for this year's race. Shane, we'll go to you first on this.
This is Skylar Heiss's return. Last year, this was a team that was in the midst of life after Ella Skeens, and they really got a nice kid come in named Macy Graves. Graves is terrific, really, really a good player, really a great scorer, rebounder, can really, really play, and kept Southeastern afloat last year, even without Heiss. Southeastern was in most of the games they played, 7-16, I think it was overall, but really a lot even more competitive than people thought they might be. Well, now you get Huff and Minton a year older. You bring Heiss back, and this team is tough. You know, I know last year it was Paint Valley, Piketon, and Southeastern all shared that fourth spot at the top as Westfall was able to sneak up there to 8-6 just ahead of them in the three hole. But it was really a log jam in the middle. Those teams just beat up on each other all year long. And I think Skylar Heiss's return is probably something that, at least on papers, which is where we do a lot of predicting, can really kind of catch your eye now that Heiss and Graves get an opportunity to play together.
John, what do you say to complete this sentence? In this year's SEC for the girls, the fans are missing blank when predicting a lot of outcomes for this year's race.
I believe they're missing the depth of the teams within the league. You know, I mentioned UNIO's biggest advantage this season will be their depth of athletes and talented athletes at that they can send at you and kind of cause havoc defensively. To me, where the league can take shape as a whole is who can use their depth to keep up with a UNIO to possibly win, to beat them, or to separate themselves from the rest of the league. I know Huntington lost some nice pieces all besides Braden Collins. Also, so, you know, how are they going to be able to replace that depth to build around Allison Basie? You mentioned Southeastern, Shane, and I know they have a nice talented top five. Do they have any depth after that? I know with Wheeler transferring, that probably injured a little bit of their help or their depth. I do think that, you know, Westfall has shown that they had some good depth last year, but with only 9 on their roster this year, you know, do they still have that depth to get through a possible injury or whatnot? So I do think depth will be a major factor. I know Piketon's playing a lot of young kids. You know, Adina's still playing a lot of young kids, and they're having some early season success. So I'll even throw youth in there as well. So, you know, talented youth and talented depth could make a major impact on this year's league.
All right. Next couple of questions here, guys, are just kind of, I don't know, just whatever comes to the top of your mind. First thing is girls team being overlooked. John, what do you think about that?
Well, Shane kind of stole my thunder on this because I'd say the Southeastern Panthers.
Yeah.
The return of Skylar Heiss along with Macy Graves, who was the fourth leading scorer in the SBC last year. Add in Lindsey Skeens, Sydney Huff, and Sierra Mitten, and you have a really dangerous group of Panthers. You know, I'm not 100% sure they can knock, you know, go into that top three or even top two. But they'll be definitely a challenge each night out. Their win over North Adams was really impressive. So I do think they were overlooked early on from what I had seen. But they definitely have the athletes and some really talented pieces.
Shane, what do you say? Girls team being overlooked?
Well, I don't think there's any question. It's Adina. Happy for Andrew Day, a former player of mine, getting the opportunity, long overdue. Spent the last decade various jobs in the boys program. takes over the girls program now, and it reminds me so much of the job that I had with Eric when we went over to Huntington there in the girls program, because the year before, John, the girls were – most of the nucleus had been freshmen. They won like five games. But if you go back before that, it was a program that had gone through like a 40-some game losing streak. They hadn't won really anything for like three, 4 years, and it was really at rock bottom. And, you know, we just kind of baby stepped. We were able to push to about 9 or 10 wins and then up a little bit more. And then before you know it, we're winning 15, 16, 17 games, and that momentum's been able to drive – on into to the current days. So I just think Andrew's taking over at a really good time. I think their guard play with Stark and Smith is terrific. The Lovelies are athletic. You mentioned depth of athletes. That fits here perfectly. Right. That's really well said on your part, because people that have listened throughout volleyball season know what I think of, like, Jenna Martin. Cheyenne Ader's had some nice games. So I think Southeastern's certainly a fair answer. I think Piketon's a fair answer. I've heard some people tell me Paint Valley. Obviously, I'm not going to go there as a coach myself. So, but for me, I just think Adena is a team that just has a lot of pieces that are kind of really ready to sneak up on some people.
Okay, let's flip it then. Say, go to the boys' side. Boys' team being overlooked, Shane.
Well, I'm really back into that mix. Remember a second ago, I was saying, you know, in terms of how you sort them out, I guess it's whatever team you don't have up there. Out of the Westfall, Paint Valley, Piketon, John, I hate to be so broad, but I guess it's whoever you don't have up there in that spot. For me, I really love what Westfall looks like. I kind of knew if Piketon got Gallion back, I knew Chandler was going to take another step. I love Paint Valley's roster. I think the Grub kid's terrific. And then with McFadden and Newland coming back healthy, they have a long list of athletes. Again, another situation on the boys' side of depth that you're talking about. I like Westfall in this overlooked spot. Wyman and Lee Masters, senior guards. You mentioned Spahn earlier. I mentioned Blackburn, very impressive in terms of – but really just their depth and some of the things that they were able to go to defensively. The young point guard that I was talking to you the other night, John Shipley, his name slipped my mind. I apologize there. Because to me, that's been a little bit of what's been missing. I know I always go back to the point guard play, Bruce, but sometimes what we're guilty of is we start looking at this two or three guard that can really score. And we look at this post that can really score. But then when you watch them play, where the rhythm is missing is they simply don't have someone on their team that can dribble the ball from point A to point B, start the offense in time. Every scorer will tell you that he or she needs the ball in certain areas. You know, the other night I watched the House of Basie play. She shot 25 free throws in her opener, John, and she was just a nightmare away from the ball. But I give Emily Halbaugh and some of those kids some credit as well because of their ability, steal and so forth, to deliver the ball on time. So I think that's so important here. Shipley could really give them some valuable minutes in terms of getting these athletes. But I think Westfall fits there, although I think there's three or four teams. I'll be anxious to hear John's answer here.
John, what do you say?
I'm going to go with the Paint Valley Bearcats. Okay. You mentioned Cordell Grubb. I've seen that kid put on shows for a couple of years now, and he's, you know, really talented scorer, does a nice job defensively. And, you know, maybe you look at you kind of look at, okay, well, Newland's one of the leading scorers returning, leading rebounder returning. He's hurt. When's he going to come along? I just think him getting healthy and McFadden being healthy, you saw what he could do in football, what a major difference maker he is. So I do like their freshman class. I think they have some nice athletes throughout the program. I thought Jeffers did a nice job last year kind of handling the point once Cruz went down with his injury.
Yeah.
It's a pretty talented group. They have some nice athletes that'll fill in. So I could see them getting into that top four spot. Like you mentioned, Westfall, really, really well said there. Piketon really impressed me this weekend. Levi Gullion he missed last season. So, you know, him coming in as a sophomore is, you can tell he can play. As soon as he stepped out on the court, you could tell he could play. I'll throw in Uniota just as a,
you know, with only two starters returning, but getting Reese Wheeler in, one of the league's leading rebounders, gives them a nice big piece that they're missing last year, with a bunch of guys that can really can shoot it. It's going to make them really hard to guard, especially with Isaac Little. So, you know, I think any of those four, obviously you look at St. Trace and Adina as your top two, but I do think there's going to be some dogfights throughout the league, and I don't think there's you're not going to be able to take a night where you just kind of walk in. You're not going to be able to walk into the township and just be like, this is Huntington, they're young. Like, those dudes can shoot it, they can score, they're going to play a style that can make certain teams uncomfortable. So if you walk into the township and they're like, this is an easy game, not going to be an easy game. Southeastern has a really talented group of sophomores, you know, probably still a year away, but man, there's some really good teams and a lot of depth in this league this year.
Hey, real quick, good story on Grubby. When he was growing up, that's why a lot of times for me it's not overlooked, because I've known him for so long, I know he can really play. But when he was younger, Coach Shoemaker would always talk about, he was like Vinny Johnson. Remember the Bad Boys for the Pistons? Right. Like, yep. the guy that would come in, he was just like instant offense. We'd always say, just add water. You know what I mean? It was one of those just – so he can really, really score. But I think Coach Williams, the more I talk to him, he's really happy with the way Grubby's coming along in his overall game. So obviously he scores 28 points there tonight. That's going to get you headlines or so forth. But I think as you watch him play into his sophomore year, you'll be a little bit more impressed with him on the defensive end, a little bit more impressed with him as a rebounder, as a passer, and just in his overall ability to impact the game in different ways. So, yeah, I think he's certainly going to be a breakout star in the league.
Okay, guys, what about question marks? Let's say question marks on the girls' side. And I think this goes to John. I'm getting mixed up on my going back and forth. But, John, what do you think the question marks are on the girls' side?
Can Huntington get enough scoring outside of Basie to knock off Uniota and gain the top spot in the league? Obviously she is just an unbelievable talent, Allison Basie is. And, you know, with Hirsch and Halbau and Steele, you have some nice athletes that are winners, but can they find the scoring punch that Braden Collins had for them? Because that's a lot of points to replace, and she could do it in a lot of different ways. So, I mean, I think Huntington has the overall top-end talent, but can they score enough?
Shane, what about you? Question mark on the girls' side.
Well, I had two things down. That was one of them. You know, they also get Grace Davis to come back. That was a great yep. answer. I'll go with my second one then, John, just to spread the wealth. The new system at Westfall. You know, we know they struggled to score the basketball in their opener. That's not like them. But at the same time, they really defended at a high level. You know, some games early in the year just have a tendency to, I don't know, just get low scoring, get ugly or whatever. So, you know, we know with Farmer and Dudgeon and Mullins, we know the type of depth that team has. Batiste really looked good at the preview. So, you know, Kitchen, so forth, all the way down the list, you know, there's just kids that can really, really score. So that'll be a question mark in terms of how quickly can they adjust to a new system, because – you know, last year's standings tell you Uniota and Huntington aren't going to give them a whole lot of time to figure it out. So, you know, they got to go now. So I think John had a great answer with Huntington. I would also throw Westfall in there.
Okay, let's flip it again. Question mark for the boys' side, Shane.
Well, there's two teams I feel like I haven't talked about all night, which is Uniota and Adina. I think right now I'll talk about Uniota. I'll maybe put Adina into my final thoughts, but I've been studying some film this afternoon and doing a lot of film study on Uniota, and Isaac Little looks terrific, doing a nice job of really attacking. I guess for me, this is a team that looks very similar to Uniota last year. However, they look a year older and maybe just a little bit better at what they do. So what's that mean in terms of record? I thought there was two or three really good wins last year that they're not guaranteed to just show up and get this year, but there's also two or three bad losses that you'd like to think that they could, you know, a year better, a year more mature, a year more complete that they can get. So I'm really in the middle right now, but as I study them on film, Little really looks good. My question is, there's plenty of kids that can score it. There's plenty of kids that can rebound it. They can really shoot it, much improved from last year. do they have enough ball handling to create plays when Little does not have the ball in his hand, I guess would be my number one question mark. And when you look at where this league is, that could mean the difference between being as high as number two or as low as number five. But I guess that was the first thing that jumped out at film in terms of what I was looking at today.
Okay. John, your question mark for the boys' side.
I'll take Adina then. You know, obviously with Zach Fout graduating, you know, you lose a lot of scoring, you lose some rebounding. How do they replace the toughness of Caleb Vogelsong? Mm. You know, me and Coach Bradley were talking the other night just about how well, you know, just using Unioda as an example, how well Vogelsong played against Unioda, and it was two completely different games. The second game, he hit a couple threes, really opened up their offense, played a really good job, had a good floor game overall. With some scoring, the first game against Unioda, he didn't take a shot and might have been the best player on the court because of just so many little things he did, so many little tough, really grown man plays that he made. You know, where do they get that? Where do they replace that at? You can replace some scoring. You know, Zach Fout was obviously outstanding, kind of carrying them scoring wise to a district championship last year, and with Logan Bennett and Preston Sykes and you know, Throckmorton and a healthy Jarrett Garrison, and then you add in Cade McKee from Unioda, this scoring and just unreal ability to take charges, you know, it, you know, you have a nice 6-7 player depth out there, but you know, will they be able to overall replace the toughness? I think they can. I do think the football run will help that with them, but you know, just finding the guy that's going to make the little plays. I would look for it to be the Throckmorton kid because he's kind of the gritty, tough, really tough kid. But I'm excited to see them, and they had a really impressive opening night win over Lucasville.
All right, gentlemen, we thank you all, for both of you, for your thoughts, and we imagine, and we would really like to hear from those of you who are listening. In order to do that, you may contact us. Shane is, excuse me, via email, admin1@svcsportszone.com. On Twitter, of course, @svcsportszone is his handle. And when he tweets about SVC athletics and so forth, using the hashtag SVC Sports Talk. On Facebook, he maintains two profiles, Shane Combs SVC Sports Zone and, of course, svcsportszone.com. John's email is jbruce1018@yahoo.com. And on Twitter, where he uses the same hashtag, his handle is CoconutWallPapa. Of course, we all know that from last year when he explained that. I still can't remember what it was, but it was very important at the time.
I'll explain it again this year. It'll be a different one.
Okay. All right. That's good. Because I don't know whether that one was true or not, John. I have to say that. And, of course, you can leave us a voicemail message at DBK Media Services voicemail, which is 740-569-3254. And, as always, we ask that you please share on Facebook our posts and that you retweet our Twitter traffic. That'd be great. And if you're listening to us on iTunes, give us a rating, a good rating, hopefully, and you can leave a review as well there. So that's going to kind of put a wrapper on this first basketball show. John, any final thoughts that you have?
I'm just really excited to get going into the season. Looking forward to the SVC girls starting on Thursday. Big matchup with Huntington and Unioda on Saturday or on Thursday. Mm-hmm. You know, it's always fun to start off the league matchup or the league race in the first game of the season. So looking forward to that game. You know, if you see me out of the game, say hey, or just hackle me. Yeah. As I'm coaching also. You can do that. I don't care. I hope I wouldn't hear it, but you can do it all you want. It doesn't bother me. Then you're probably right over whatever you're going to say. So looking forward to the season.
Whoa. Shane, any final thoughts from you, Shane?
Well, I had several things in my notes. I think John did a great job with Adina there because I certainly didn't want to shut them out. So I echo that. I think that the Fuglsong graduation is the kind of sneaky graduation of the year. I think that's something to really keep their eye on. But I'm not here at all to doubt Adina's talent because they're very, very talented.
Yeah.
I think they're going to be a super team. But no way we can get to everything. Had one person asking if we're buying the 8-1 boys start. I think we kind of touched on that tonight. I think if you're going to get Zane Trace, you're going to have to get him early. Obviously, it was good to see Nesser back, but obviously he's not 100%. Davidson, I know, had gone through some injuries as well and so forth. So I think that's a fair statement that was given to me. Girls play, John mentioned, starts this week. Two topics I didn't get to tonight that I think will come up. I'd love to get feedback on. Maybe we'll even throw these out there on Twitter or SEO Preps, John. The numbers continue to be a really frustrating thing. And for people like us that love the game, it's really a scary thing. You know what I mean? Like when I see the freshman basketball, JV girls, these numbers going down. And really I want to be careful here because I respect coaches' opinions, but I think coaches are becoming a little bit to blame in terms of them not wanting to be open-minded to certain things, such as sophomore basketball and so forth.
Yes.
I'm becoming very frustrated because it concerns me greatly when I look at the pattern over the last 10 or 15 years. If we have another pattern over the next decade, then some of our levels of basketball are in real, real trouble. And then my dad made an awesome point today when we had lunch together. You're talking about someone had, 30 years of experience at the junior high level and how he's followed these kids into high school and watched how they develop. You know, asking me in terms of as he watched the Vinton County Uniota the other night, and he watched Miami Trace and Vinton County, and he said not just the varsity games but the freshman JV level. He's like, our basketball, even kids that have great size, he's like, the post game's really going away, isn't it? Mm-hmm. We really talked about that. And I wanted, yes. I think that was fascinating, especially coming from someone who has his experience in because of how much, you know, a lot of times as the junior high coach, you had to take the kid that was tall and uncoordinated and work with him and develop him and not quit on him and so forth. So I think that could be a neat discussion too. So those are some of the things I had on my agenda. Obviously, we have a long winter ahead of us, so you know we'll get out of here tonight. But guys, it's so exciting to be back. I think our basketball shows, as I said in the beginning, are some of our really unique shows. So fans, let us know what's on your mind. As John said, make sure you say hello to us when we're out there. I love those conversations. Had hours of conversations the other day at Zane Trace and thoroughly enjoyed those people. And look forward to getting back at it again this week. So guys, until next week, appreciate all that you guys do. And we'll get together next week, talk some basketball again. So fans, make sure you're checking out the website, the boys and girls scoreboard pages. Just about every night, I'll have some scores and stats on there. And we'll always do our best to keep it 100% SVC, 100% of the time.
You've been listening to the Triple Crown Family Fun Center, SVC Sports Talk. SVC Sports Talk is brought to you by SVCSportsZone.com and Triple Crown Family Fun Center. Join us next time for the Triple Crown Family Fun Center, SVC Sports Talk. And visit SVCSportsZone.com, where we're 100% SVC, 100% of the time.